308, Milwaukee Teachers Education Association versus Milwaukee Board of School Directors, appearing for the Journal Sentinel, is David Lucy. Mr. Lucy.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am David Lucy. I'm representing Journal Sentinel, Inc., publisher of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the petitioner in this court, the intervener in the circuit court, the respondent in the Court of Appeals. The ultimate issue in this case is whether the public is entitled to know which employees of its school district have been fired as a result of a public investigation. That is the missing piece of information in this open records case. The issue is not whether the ancient criminal histories of some public employees should be made public record. They already are public record. The issue is not whether the identity of these teachers as teachers or school district employees with criminal records should be made public. It already was made public. The only issue here is whether the action of the school district in terminating these teachers as a result of an investigation of their criminal backgrounds is to be made public.
Well, now let me see if I understand it. We have seven employees at issue here, right?
Correct.
And so their names are already public.
The earlier open records request by the Journal Sentinel asked for all of the names and records of all employees who had criminal records.
And so that was 500 or so plus. So you've got their names, and do you have the offense?
Yes.
Committed. You've got all that.
Correct.
All right. So there's no fight about that. That was already released.
That's right.
So the only information you want, as I understand it, as to seven employees is what happened to them. Were they discharged?
Correct.
Or were they not discharged?
The information that MPS planned to release, and you can find it in the record at appendix page 119, is a sheet they prepared providing the name of the employee, the building assignment and job of the employee, whether they were terminated or resigned as a result of the criminal background check, and if they had filed a grievance, the number of the grievance and the date it was filed.
And you want the results of the grievance hearing or not?
That wasn't
asked.
I don't believe that was in the request.
Oh,
it certainly wasn't in the disclosure that the MPS planned to make. This case had its genesis 4 years ago when this was a hot issue in Milwaukee about how many employees of MPS had criminal records, what MPS was doing to determine whether people it was hiring or had in its schools had criminal records. The school district paid for a criminal background check, as any citizen can do, by paying the statutorily prescribed fee to the Department of Justice. And it obtained the information, and then it released it to the newspaper. Then the newspaper reported on it, and the reporting is in the record. And the reporting was, in my judgment, some of the best reporting that we can expect from a newspaper. It captured the subtleties of the issue. It portrayed four or five employees, some with serious criminal records, some with minor criminal records, and discussed the difficult judgment that a school district would have to make about, are these pertinent to their duties or are they not pertinent? Is this so old that it shouldn't be considered or not so old? The reporting wasn't sensational. It was educational and portraying the difficulty of the judgments to be made. And then MPS spent months making that judgment, and the Journal Sentinel then asked, what's the result? What have you done? There were 18 employees terminated or resigned. MPS gave notice to all of them. Seven brought this action to preclude disclosure of the information.
Did they do it in concert or did they do it individually? Did they ask the judge, the circuit court judge, to review their records independently of each other, or was it just sort of a mass request?
It was filed as a single action. With the seven plaintiffs as Doe, anonymous parties, and their collective bargaining agent as a party as well.
I know how you stated the issue, but it seems to me the issue in this case is whether or not they have a right to de novo review. Am I wrong?
The ultimate open records issue is should the information be released.
I mean, that's why we're here, right? I mean, putting aside everything, we're here because you don't want to have a de novo review, and these people want to have a de novo review as provided for in Wozniacki.
That's the issue that was decided in the Court of Appeals. The issue that I thought should be decided in the Court of Appeals ultimately was, should this information be released? And I asked this court, if it gets to the merits of the open records question, to decide the merits of the open records question.
Are you conceding then that they have a right to de novo review?
Certainly not. No.
Well, there are two parts to your argument. Let me restate Justice Banowitz's question. Maybe I'll restate it correct. One, should there be a de novo review by a court, or, and that's the other end of that first question, or does the record custodian have the ultimate say? That's the first question.
Right? That's right.
The second question is, should the court hold against you and say that there is a judicial de novo review and the record custodian does not have the ultimate final say, then which court should make the de novo review? You have three choices: us, Court of Appeals, or the Circuit Court. Those are the two questions. Mm-hmm. Right. Do you agree that those are the two questions in essence? Okay.
And it's imperative that de novo review be done. If it's going to be done in all open records cases, it's absolutely imperative that it be done expeditiously, and that wasn't done here.
Yes. And that's one of your complaints, and truly, you know, it's been, as you pointed out, 19 months since you made the first request, and it's gone through the court process. Do you have any suggestion, if we were to say, yes, there would be a de novo review, of how to shorten the time for getting this information? Because ultimately you may get the information, but it may be not timely, as you pointed out in your brief. Do you have any thought about that, as far as the process itself?
It's difficult to imagine any way that you could have de novo judicial review without substantially undermining the purpose of the open records law. I don't think this case is atypical in terms of how long it's going to take to get a open records case like this through the courts.
But you could have had de novo had you consented to de novo review. As I recall the record, you made the request on January 3rd. Is that correct?
I believe that may be correct, Your Honor. I'm not sure whether that.
And this got into Judge Mannion's court on January 21st, 18 days.
Yes, it was.
Now, would that 18? If you had not raised the objection, or I don't know if you raised it, but maybe Judge Mannion raised it by himself. But had he simply said, yes, I've got jurisdiction, you're entitled to de novo review, you would have had your review within 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, I wasn't seeking a review, but Judge Mannion conducted a full evidentiary hearing.
Right.
He did everything necessary to a de novo review, except say in his decision that his decision was a de novo review. In fact, in his decision, he commented on the merits of the open records issue and indicated quite strongly that he would rule that disclosure of these records was appropriate under the open records law. But the delay didn't come in at the circuit court level. The delay came at the Court of Appeals level, where the Court of Appeals overrode Judge Mannion's decision he denied relief pending appeal.
I'm aware of that, Mr. Lucy. What I'm trying to look forward beyond this case. This is a test case, obviously. This is a case to determine whether Wozniacki applies only to district attorney records in the hands of the district attorney or not. And one of the concerns expressed in your brief and expressed in the Wozniacki, as I recall, was that if we allowed de novo review, there would be an interminable, or at least not interminable, but the delay would be inappropriate. And as I see it, if it had worked in this case, if in fact we had settled this law before this case came, you would have had a decision within 20 some days from Judge Mannion as to whether or not these records should be released. Is that correct?
That's correct, but now, that is rarely the end of the process in an open records case.
Beg pardon?
A circuit court decision is rarely the end of the process in an open records
case. I understand that they could, but I would assume that the standard of review on a court of appeals of the circuit court would be very discretionary.
No, it's de novo in open records case.
The court of appeals would be de novo?
Yes, it's de novo all the way up.
The circuit court?
It's in open records.
Has that been decided?
Yes, it's always been de novo review of the open records issues all the way up. The Supreme Court determines the balancing of the interests de novo, with no deference to the custodian and no deference to the courts below.
Do you have authority?
That's why appeal is so common in open records cases. Any case worth fighting over at the circuit court level is going to be worth fighting over through the appellate courts. And that's why delay, substantial delay of periods of years, is inevitable if this Wozniacki remedy is extended to the entire open records law.
Well, that's new law to me. I don't know what authority you cite to say that if you get an opinion at the circuit court level, which is a de novo review, and so the person aggrieved goes to the Court of Appeals, and you're saying that the review of the circuit court's decision is de novo as well, and it's not a review of abuse of discretion.
It's the very rare open records case where there is any dispute of facts. Very often open records cases come to this court on stipulated facts. There was no contest of facts in the case before Judge Mannion. The facts are not an issue. What is an issue is the application of the balancing test of the open records law to the facts. And that determination under the Wisconsin News Press case and numerous cases before that is a de novo determination of law which the appellate courts make without any deference to the courts below or to the custodian. That's the source of the delay. And in this case, Justice Wilcox, we asked for an expedited briefing schedule. No one opposed that request, but the Court of Appeals denied it. The Court of Appeals granted a stay of release of the information pending appeal, and that's, of course, what delayed release of the information. And then the Court of Appeals took a year between completion of the briefing to decide the case. If these kinds of cases are going to become common, if this remedy is to apply to the entire open records law, this court should make a very strong statement that kind of review is not acceptable and some extremely expedited procedure has to be devised in the Court of Appeals to make sure that these cases are decided promptly.
And that's the reason for my question, because I think this, as Justice Babich and others have said, this is a test case, but if the remedy could be shortened, it certainly would make a great difference, because it's obvious that you can carry this on for months and perhaps years.
And now, what would the trial judge do? The trial judge would get all the records, is that the point? All the records that are in dispute, if there was a de novo review?
In a typical de novo review, the trial judge receives the records in camera, and if records are an issue, in this case records weren't an issue, it was just specified information. Here's whatever evidence the parties want to present as to what the custodian did, what the custodian's reasons for restricting access were, and then weighs the public interest against the interests asserted by the custodian in restricting disclosure.
So if it went up on appeal, then it's a paper record. Everything is on paper, not testimony, not witnesses. It's all paper on de novo. So a court of appeals would have as much information and knowledge as a trial court.
That's the ordinary open records case. Absolutely.
And that's why you say it's always de novo, because there's no expertise, no advantage that a trial court may have over an appellate court. That's why you keep saying that we always do a de novo.
That's correct, Karen. On the merits of whether Wozniacki should be extended, as the Court of Appeals did, there is certainly, and no one disputes this, there's no provision in the open records law for this remedy, for subjects to have notice and an opportunity for hearing. And the legislative history of the open records law makes clear that the legislature considered provisions of this nature, certain limited notice and opportunity for hearing provisions when material was being sought by subpoena, and rejected or did not adopt those provisions. They did not, there were amendments offered but did not become part of the law back in 1981. In 1991, the legislature adopted a provision suggesting that there should be a study of whether this kind of provision should be imposed, and Governor Thompson vetoed it, citing his concerns about the burdens it would impose on local governments and the costs that it would impose. And then after this court's decision in Wozniacki, as part of the biennial budget bill, the legislature passed a provision that said there should be no requirement of notice and opportunity for hearing unless it's otherwise provided by law. The governor vetoed that, but he vetoed it because he thought it was an inappropriate provision for the budget bill, and said he wanted to work with the proponents of that provision to preserve the open records law. In light of that legislative history, there can be no implication of this kind of right into the open records law.
Are you arguing then that Wozniacki was wrongly decided? It seems like that's what your argument is.
I don't think that's what Wozniacki decided. Wozniacki, in every place that the court expressed its holding in Wozniacki, it said because of the special powers of a district attorney, we hold that a district attorney must give notice and an opportunity for hearing before releasing this kind of information. And district attorneys are outside the scope of the open records law. This court has previously held that there's a common law exemption of district attorneys from the open records law. They don't have to do the balancing. They don't even have to respond to an open records request. And that derives from their role in the criminal justice system. It's one of the privileges, the extraordinary privileges, that district attorneys enjoy. And the court in Wozniacki noted that in light of the fact that district attorneys don't have to release anything, that's one of the reasons why, if they do, they should be required to give notice and an opportunity for the subject of the record to seek de novo review. It makes sense in light of the way this court has treated district attorneys in the past, and it makes sense in light of the extraordinary powers that district attorneys hold. District attorneys have the power essentially to destroy reputations by bringing criminal charges, by gathering, they have extraordinary power to collect information through subpoenas, through search warrants, through wiretaps, to collect information about people that can be, as Wozniacki Court expressed, gossip, it can be innuendo, it can be anything. And it's stigmatized when it's made part of a criminal investigation file as being evidence of crime.
Why aren't those same considerations present here, Mr. Lucy, with the school board records? Give me your best shot on that.
Well, the records here are, the information at issue here, again, is who did the school district terminate, why did they terminate them, what were their building assignments, and have they filed a grievance? And that's nothing like what a district attorney assembles and charges when he puts it in a criminal investigation file.
What if the request were for the entire personnel file? Would those privacy and reputational interests that we addressed in Wozniacki, would those still be a concern? If I know this is not your case, but if the request was for the entire personnel file?
Those would be a concern for the custodian. And as we have seen in prior open records cases, custodians are quite active in asserting those interests when requests are made for employee personnel files. In the Areola case in the Court of Appeals, the Butler versus Cohen, the Hangman case, in the Breyer case, the chief of police asserted the privacy and reputational interests of the people he arrests. Custodians have never been recalcitrant or reluctant to assert privacy and reputational interests in contesting open records requests.
I'm sorry.
And I think the judgment of the legislature has been that custodians are the appropriate person to make that determination, given the strong public interest on the other side in having timely access to government information.
I got the impression that you started your argument this morning narrowing, and from your perspective, making clear what was an issue so that you could then argue that really privacy interests are not implicated or substantially implicated here when you go to the balancing test. And again, you made the argument of four things that are being requested. In these four things, who did they terminate? Why did they terminate them? What are the building assignments? And did they file a grievance? Why are privacy interests not implicated in those four requested items?
Well, I think a custodian could assert that privacy interests are implicated when someone's termination from employment is made public. I think that a custodian could assert that, but I think when you look at the law as it's developed in this court and in the Court of Appeals, specifically in the Wisconsin News Press case, when a public investigation is completed and the public body takes action in a personnel matter, as a matter of law, the Wisconsin News Press opinion says, the public interest in disclosure of the results of the public body's action outweighs whatever privacy interests may have, regardless of what the results of the action are. The results of the action, I believe, in News Press were that the guy did nothing wrong. But the court held that the public interest in knowing the results of the action outweighs any privacy interest in concealing the fact that the investigation had occurred or information about the investigation.
That's your understanding of a holding of News Press, that as a matter of law, if the investigation has been terminated, that the public interest outweighs the privacy interest?
What News Press says is that once the investigation is completed and the public body acts, at that point, the public's interest in knowing the results of the action outweigh the privacy interests of the employee who's the subject of the action.
Well, let's start a little farther back. Personnel records and discipline records are not per se closed. That's right?
That's correct.
In other words, the record holder can release them. There is no per se. So, and that's what Wozniacki recognized too. So you are saying that once the employee is terminated, resigned, fired, whatever, you think that's open and public, regardless of the cause? I mean, let me just put it this way. If you went to the MPS and said, does Shirley Abrahamson work there? And if so, when did she leave? That's a personnel record, right?
That is information that presumably would be drawn from a personnel record.
Okay. Do you think that invades privacy?
Certainly not. Whether someone is employed or not doesn't invade privacy.
Did you want more than that?
We wanted to know if they had been terminated or resigned, and if it was in connection with or a result of the criminal background investigation.
Well, it's the second part of that information that apparently raises difficulty, right?
But I think Wozniacki can be limited in another way, and that is, Wozniacki talks about information that implicates privacy interests. And this court has determined, for instance, in the Breyer case, it weighed the public interest in disclosure of arrests and the reasons for arrests against the public interest in protecting arrestees' reputations and privacy, and said, as a matter of law, for all arrestees, the public interest in disclosure outweighs the privacy interest.
You know, I want to look at Wisconsin News Press again, and I'm looking at page 781. And the court there held, and I think this was a unanimous decision. Look at that. Yep. It says, having determined that there is no blanket exception under the open records law for public employee disciplinary or personnel records, the next question is, did the district properly deny access to the records at issue in this case. So we're reviewing the district. This presents a question of law which we review without deference to the courts below. Is that what you're relying on in your statement that this is a de novo review here? And it came to us right from the circuit court. Right. Thank you.
And
Lucy, your red light's on. You have a couple of seconds to just give a concluding statement.
Just
please.
To finish my point about Breyer. Wasnicki should not require that the chief of police now has to give notice to every arrestee and every arrestee have an opportunity to seek de novo review before the arrest is made public. As a matter of law, that kind of information should be public, and this court should limit Wasnicki in that way as well.
Thank you, Mr. Lucy. Mr. Lerner, representing the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Lerner. I represent the seven individual plaintiffs in this case, as well as the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. As an aside, the reason the union is part of this case is that there are additional issues in the circuit court case that were brought that were never resolved while this issue was going to the Court of Appeals and ultimately here, involving whether or not the school district gave the members and the union adequate notice or an opportunity under Wozniacki to be heard before they make their decision. In this case, what happened is in early December, the Journal Sentinel made a public records demand, as Mr. Lucy decided, as said. On January 3rd, the custodian of the records notified a number of employees, 18 in all, that he had decided to release the information that was requested and advised them that they had 10 days in which to bring an action in circuit court under Wozniacki for review. This indicated that, at least as to the extent of a de novo review, the school board agreed that Wozniacki was applicable. The separate question that isn't before the court today is whether or not these individuals had some right to say to the records custodian before he made his decision, hey, this is why you should not release these records. So he could, in our view, make an appropriate balancing test. On January 3rd, this notice went out, and ultimately seven out of the 18 people filed an action in court 10 days later, on the day that the board said they were going to take action if we didn't. We then appeared immediately that day before Judge Wasilewski, and a hearing was then scheduled within a week or 8 days on July 21st for an evidentiary hearing.
January or July 21st?
January 21st, I'm sorry. And we had an evidentiary hearing, we had arguments, and then the judge agreed to have some briefs filed, and we went back to court on January 27th.
By evidentiary hearing, you didn't have any of these, did you have any of these seven, did you have live witnesses or anything like that?
The only live witness who testified was the record custodian. And
it was all records?
It was, we put in certain records about the people and information about them in regard to how long they'd been in the school system, when and what the nature of their convictions were. They were all misdemeanors. All had been a number of years earlier. Some had been as long as 15, 20 years earlier. And then on January 27th, Judge Mannion ruled he didn't have jurisdiction. If he had ruled on that day that I don't believe I have jurisdiction, but if I have done this de novo review and I find that this decision was appropriate, we wouldn't have been here.
You wouldn't?
No.
Why wouldn't you have been, as a good lawyer, Mr. Lerner, why wouldn't you have immediately appealed that to the Court of Appeals?
Because we believe that, unlike Mr. Lucy, that the review by by an appellate court would be very limited to the exercise of discretion by the trial court, and there would be, we would have had a very, very, it would have been very unlikely we would have gotten the decision on the de novo review reversed.
What's your authority for saying this would be a discretionary review by the Court of Appeals? I question Mr. Loosley very closely on that.
I have not researched that issue. That was our assumption all along. And this is the first I've heard that argument made in this case. I don't think it came up as an issue before today in the Court of Appeals or in the Circuit Court.
Well, how do you describe News Press, Wisconsin News Press? In that case, the News Press, Inc. and the publishing company sought a summary judgment that denied the request for under the open records law to release two records of the school district of Sheboygan Falls involving discipline against a school district administrator. And so that was the issue. It came here by bypass, and this court said, having determined that there's no blanket exception under the open records law for public employee disciplinary records, the next question is, did the district properly deny access? And now we're sitting as the Court of Appeals and ourselves. The only appellate judge, this presents a question of law which we review without deference to the courts below. So they're not looking at what the trial court did in terms of what the district said. They're going to review alone the district.
That may be correct. There's nothing in that that talks about reviewing the factual decision that the court had made. But whether it is...
Did the district properly deny access? That's the question.
Even if it is, there, as far as we did nothing to delay this decision in the Court of Appeals.
But that's not our concern.
Yeah.
Our concern is that in the future, I mean, it's a question raised by Mr. Lucien, it's a troubling question.
It is.
And that is, can't a people who feel aggrieved, who lose at the trial at the circuit court, simply delay this thing by bringing appeals and thereby essentially make the request for the open record totally stale and essentially make the statute not in compliance with its original intent?
As I recall, that issue came up in the course of Justice Abraham, Chief Justice's dissent in Wozniacki, and came up in your concurring opinion. And in your concurring opinion, you said the court would take, if this became a problem, the court would take steps to see that it doesn't happen again.
Well, how much do you think the court ought to add to this statute and rewrite the statute? I mean, first we're going to say you get a right, somebody gets a right to intervene, somebody's got a right to bring a lawsuit, get notice and bring a lawsuit. Now, if that's not fast enough, we're going to write a quick appeal. Do you think the court ought to be writing all this out?
The court made a decision in Wozniacki that, as I understand it, the Journal Sentinel is not asking this court to overturn. And in that decision, the court considered those questions, and the majority decided that despite the lack of any explicit language in the statute, that implicit in the open records law were these rights. The question then becomes whether there's anything about the district attorney that makes, in Wozniacki, that makes it different than other open records custodians. And I submit to the court that this court's jurisprudence on this issue makes it clear there is no difference. And every court other than Judge Mannion that's reviewed this case, to my knowledge, has come to that conclusion. The three judges who were on the Court of Appeals in this case came to that conclusion. Judge Bartel came to that conclusion in the Kalin case that is referred to in some of the amicus briefs, and in the Klein case, which is a case where both the trial court and the three judges of the circuit of the Court of Appeals and the Attorney General in that case changed the mind of the custodian of the records after the custodian had said, we're going to release these records, and then when the public employee brought the action to prevent the prison system, in essence, releasing personal records about some of its workers to people who were committed civilly for sex offenses that when the public record custodian had decided to release those. And that's a case that shows, I suggest to you, the real need that this go beyond just district attorneys and it cover all record custodians.
Do you concede that the language of the opinion, however, is specific to district attorneys?
I would say that at times it's very specific and at times it's more general. But there are certainly times where it specifically says as to just district attorneys. And I would submit there is really no basis for distinguishing from district attorneys.
Well, certainly it would be clear that district attorneys are in a really different position as to their gathering of information, their ability to use their powers to get this information than not only this case but other record custodians. So why isn't there a difference?
I think that that was stated.
Yes.
And in the Faust case, that's what the court held. But subsequent to Faust, in the Nichols case, Nichols v. Bennett, the court certainly ordered the district attorney to comply with the open records law. And in that case, Justice Geske in her majority opinion and the Chief Justice in her concurring opinion referred to it's the nature of the documents in question, not where they're located, which controls under the open records law. And it seems to me that records of the kind that we have here, whether they were held, the same consequence arises for the employee as whether it's held by a district attorney or held by a records custodian.
Is your argument that Rosnicki applied to the district attorneys, but that the rationale of that opinion can be applied to other custodians, or is your argument that Wozniacki is not exclusive, as written, is not exclusive to district attorneys, but as written, was intended to apply to all custodians?
I would say that the better argument is, there is some argument for both, but the stronger argument is that that this is an extension of Wozniacki, that because it's based on the same rationale.
That Wozniacki, as written, applies just to district attorneys?
Yes. I think there's arguments beyond that, but I think the other argument is stronger.
I want to...
Mr. Lerner, Mr. Lucy has cited some legislative history. How do you respond to that?
I respond in several ways. I think the legislative history in the end is not conclusive, but more importantly, I don't think it's really, in view of the decision in Wozniacki, where the court ruled, and if the court's going to I think the court has to overturn that decision, which was made just two or three years ago, to not rule for us in this case. In that case, the court said, despite the legislative history, despite this, it's implicit in the law that there is this right of review. And on that basis, I think the legislative history is not really important unless you're going to sit back and consider reversing Wozniacki, which the Journal Sentinel has not asked for in this case.
Could I ask this? As I understand it, a couple of years ago, the Journal Sentinel made a request for information, and there were more than 500 employees involved. If Wozniacki is extended to cover a situation like this, would each one of those 500-plus employees be entitled to notice and be entitled to a de novo hearing?
I think it depends. I think an argument could be made to that effect. We were not, unlike the notice that was given to the members and the union of the 18, no notice was given to us of the 548, even though that was subsequent, I believe, to Wozniacki, that information was requested. We had absolutely no knowledge of that.
Well, do you think you should have then under Wozniacki, as you interpret Wozniacki? Should all 548 gotten notice that the information about their arrest records or conviction records was going to be released?
Yes.
So the answer to then Justice Prosser's question is 548 people should have gotten notice, and 1 through 548 could have brought consolidated or separate lawsuits.
Possibility. Just like in this case, everybody didn't bring it. In this case, some people did.
I asked opposing counsel that, and we've kind of danced around that question. That is a real concern on how that would be handled. And
I understand that.
Well, we have to deal with that.
Yes.
And the question is whether it's 500, it could be 5,000, or 10. The point is there some suggestion you would have? And now we've talked about de novo, you talked about erroneous exercise of discretion, and I believe it seems to be de novo, but in any event, how would this court be able to fashion a remedy to apply to that situation that's being raised by both sides?
I think the issue under the 548 would be an issue of whether or not those are like the arrest records in, and maybe I was wrong when I said yes, it would be whether those are records that are like the arrest records that the Journal Sentinel asked for in Bryan. Who was arrested last night, as opposed to the criminal records of those people? And releasing that information alone doesn't get the Journal very far. They have that information. They could have, if they had dug in this case, probably found out, without the open records law, everything that they want here. And I'd like to, just for a second, address, if I may, something that I think is very important on the facts in this case, that, if I may, just for a second, and we can then go back. Mr. Lucy said that once the public body acts, that then disclosure is okay under the law. The fact of the matter is there's a collective bargaining agreement between the school board and the teachers union representing all these individual plaintiffs, and the decision of the school board is not the final act. The final act is binding arbitration, and when they made this request, six out of seven of these cases had gone to bargaining, were in the process of arbitration, and they didn't want to wait for that part of the process either. So I think if he makes that concession that these records, for some reason, that you get to the point that the public body has finished acting, they haven't finished. The process continues. It's part of the agreement between the union and the school board.
Wasn't this point, though, from the news press case citing page 788, whether or not a person has been cleared of the charges against him or her, the completion of the investigation removes the danger warned against, and this is referring to the UW-Platteville case, also education case, that a subject of investigation might be stigmatized simply for being under investigation. And then he said, and this is what his point was, and as we have already stated, we are to give greater weight to the public interest in knowing the disciplinary results of conduct of its public officials than to the possible harm to particular officials' reputation. The point was when the investigation was completed, not when everyone acted or didn't act.
In any event, the problem is it's still a balancing test, and the evidence that was brought forward in this case showed that the records custodian did not consider things that we believe were appropriate for him to consider, including all we really asked for in this case was redaction of the names. That they would have had all of, when Mr. Lucy got up here and started, he got up and said, well, we need this information so we can find out what the board has done. Well, they would have gotten all that information if it had simply been redacted. They would have known how many, whether John Doe, number one, was reinstated by an arbitrator, or what the board had done. They just wanted these names. And interestingly enough, when they wrote the article about all the others, they never mentioned one of their names, the ones who didn't make any open records objection. And for years, the journal which got this right to get these arrests, the names of all these people under Breyer, they've had a policy, they never disclose those names until they're actually charged.
Well, let me ask you this. You've heard what Mr. Lucy said the newspaper wants. What information do you object to releasing?
We object to releasing the names of the people.
Okay.
They can have a redacted name.
You can have John Smith 1, Mary Smith 1, John Smith 2, Mary Smith 2, etc. Okay.
And we object to information as to the specific school assignment they have.
Okay, so because you think that's an identification.
Yes.
All right. So they can have Mary Smith 2.
Right.
And are you willing that they release that Mary Smith was terminated?
Yes.
And are you willing to have it released that Mary Smith was terminated because of possession of a controlled substance?
Yes.
And are you willing to have released that Mary Smith, too, has filed a grievance on her termination?
Right.
And that's as far as it went because... So the only thing you're really objecting to is to identify who Mary Smith, too, is.
That's correct. That was our objection in the circuit court, and when we asked the record custodian whether he considered redaction, he said no. That's all we asked him to do. All we wanted was a consideration of redaction.
Now, you familiar with the Wisconsin News Press case?
I probably do. It's not coming in too strong, but...
This is the one that we've been reading from that Chief Justice Day wrote on a bypass in which they wanted information about a disciplinary action against a school administrator. And our court made the balance. Didn't defer to the agency, the administrator's balance. And then it said now that the investigation has concluded, the public has a right to know its results. That we made the balance favoring disclosure in this case, we conclude that they outweigh the general policy against releasing this type of personnel record. Thus we allow disclosure. That's 788.
Right. We would agree if this had been the superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools...
Ms. Larry, I'm sorry, but I'd like...
If we had agreed that this was the... If in our case, instead of it being a teaching assistant, a paraprofessional who worked maybe, who knows, very minor job, part-time, hourly wage of maybe $8 or $9 an hour, of which there are several thousand in the public schools... We think they're different than the superintendent of schools. If we represented the superintendent of schools, and we think there's a difference under the balancing test between, and that was also done in the case out of Sherwood. I forgot the name of it right now, that this court also reviewed, I believe. And we think that was part of the balancing test, Your Honor, is that you look at both. You have to look at who this person is in this whole situation. You don't just there's a difference between a high administrator and somebody else. There would certainly be a difference, I would think, between one of you and somebody who worked in this court in a janitorial job. I'm not saying their job has any less merit than yours, but in terms of the public interest, there certainly would be something different, and that ought to be applied in the balancing test.
Who do you think should make the balance, Mr. Lerner?
Under Woznicki, I believe the circuit court has to make a de novo review, and that the appropriate review in this court would be for whether or not that was a proper exercise of judicial discretion by that judge.
Counsel, how can you say that in view of page 183 of Woznicki, which says, the application of a statute to an undisputed set of facts presents a question of law which we review de novo, and page 775 of the News Press case, which says, this presents a question of law which we review without deference to the circuit court's determination. and page 273 of the Nichols case, all the three prime cases cited thus far. This presents a question of law which reapproached without deference to the conclusions of the court below. How can you stand here and argue that that is deferential?
I'm arguing, Your Honor, that that's the test you ought, perhaps you ought to change the law then, that you ought to have that in order to protect this right of review, which I think is very important, that perhaps somehow imposing a lesser burden on the appellate process might be a way of speeding that process if we got there. And it should be
I've only cited what I think are the three most discussed cases thus far, but it's your position, at least with regard to the standard of review, that the Wozniacki case, the News Press case, and the Nichols versus Bennett case should all be reversed as to that standard of review.
I have that. I think that as a means of addressing the problem that the court is, some members of the court are concerned about, that this process would go on too long, that kind of a review would alleviate that problem.
What do you think?
That is not an issue that would, as far as I know, that was not an issue, to my knowledge, this is the first we've ever discussed this issue in this case. It was never discussed in the circuit court. It was never discussed in the Court of Appeals.
Well, both of them did do de novo reviews.
The Court of Appeals has done no review of the facts. And we believe the matter, just as an aside, and this will take 1 second, that the matter goes back to the, if you find that there is a right of review and affirm the Court of Appeals on that, it ought to go back to the circuit court. In this case, because of this delay in time, there have been changes in facts and circumstances that ought to be considered in reviewing this matter. Finally, I want to say about that Mr. Lucy was somewhat inaccurate when he talked about the request for an expedited appeal. That is true. We joined. Both sides asked the Court of Appeals for an expedited appeal. The court said it would do so if the parties agreed to a page limit on the number of pages of its brief. We agreed to that, and the Journal Sentinel did not. And that's why there was not an expedited review in the Court of Appeals in this case.
Well, Mr. Lehrer, why should the privacy and reputational interests of these seven people outweigh the public's right to know?
It may or may not. It has to be considered, and I don't think it was adequately considered by the records custodian in this case. And he did not. When he testified, he said he didn't consider in terms of that how long ago the convictions were, the nature of the convictions. He didn't consider redaction.
Okay.
Those are all the things that we're asking that should be considered in the balancing test.
I guess I didn't ask precisely the question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
My fault. Wozniacki was a district attorney's case.
Yes.
And because of the particular nature of the district attorney's powers, et cetera, we, at least a majority, said that should be subject to review. What is it about this custodian that is so different? It strikes me that this custodian doesn't have any of the powers that we referred to in the district attorney. Why should we apply Wozniacki as a matter of public policy, assuming that it's just with district attorneys, to this case, where we're dealing solely with a custodian, not a district attorney?
Because the court has said that you look at the nature of the records and not where they are at in other cases, and the consequences to that person whose records are being disclosed are the same whether they're held by a district attorney or held by a different custodian. And while the district attorney may get more records, have power to get records that another custodian cannot get, it still can end up being exactly the same records. It would have been interesting in Wozniacki, for instance, if there had been a second, not only a request of the district attorney for these personnel records, in that case, Wozniacki was a teacher, by the way, in happenstance. If there had been while this request for these teachers' personnel records that the school had sent to the district attorney, there had also been a public records request to the school board. And I can't come up with any justification intellectually to say
But a district attorney has all kinds of investigatory powers that the school custodian does not.
Right.
A district attorney can come into possession of a lot of records that are nothing more than hearsay, gossip, innuendo, etc.
I understand
that. It seems to me is not implicated in these kinds of.
But records. In this case, we're not talking about those. In Wozniacki, we were talking about the teacher's personnel file from his public records at the school. And if there had been a request to that school for the exact same records, and there's no right to review the decision of that custodian, but a right to review the decision of the district attorney, that doesn't make sense intellectually to me. And I think that the thrust of the opinion in Wozniacki, which says that this is inherent in the statute, that there is some right to review to protect these privacy rights, makes it so that it should also apply to non-district attorney custodians. Thank you.
Aren't you arguing that, I hear you arguing that Wozniacki was wrongly decided because it said that it just applied to district attorneys. Are you arguing that? That Wozniacki was wrongly decided because it emphasized location?
I'm saying that while the language of Wozniacki, I'm not saying Wozniacki was wrongly decided. The court did not have before it the question of whether it applied to anyone but a district attorney. Even though that was somewhat, it was certainly referred to in the dissent, and it was to some extent discussed in the concurring opinion. But it was, and the question then is, is Wozniacki limited to that? We don't think Wozniacki was wrongly decided. We believe it was rightly decided and that it should apply to others because there's, under the other cases that have come before, there's no reason to look to have a separate test here.
Thank you, Mr. Lerner. Mr. Lucy, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I'd just like to return the discussion for a minute to what's at stake in the open records law. In our democracy, an informed electorate is vital to the success of our government. And the open records law, although it's not a constitutional provision, has great constitutional significance and underpinnings. And what the legislature sought to guarantee in that statute is timely access to information about the affairs of government. So the citizens can evaluate the conduct of their public officials and can consider whether their officials are pursuing policies of which they approve. And at the very core of the open records law is scrutiny of misconduct by public officials. That's what so many of these requests are about. And in so many of them, issues about privacy and reputation are raised, considered by the custodian, often used by the custodian to justify withholding records. But the legislature looked at, considered, should there be a notice and hearing opportunity so individuals can assert their own privacy rights, their own reputations, and weighed that against the consequences that would surely have on the goal of timely access to public information, and did not include those amendments in its bill.
Mr. Lucy, could I ask you a question that I was thinking of asking Mr. Lerner? And that is, privacy and reputation are important considerations. Can we depend on the legislature to protect those interests, given the fact that the news media will attack the legislature that goes out to protect them?
Well, and the legislature has done that. The legislature passed a right of privacy statute that defines the individual's right of privacy in Wisconsin and defines the remedies available for it. And again, that has a long history. This court had repeatedly said the courts in Wisconsin will not establish a right of privacy. If that's to be done, it's for the legislature to do. And the legislature did it after years of struggle and carefully defined that remedy and limited it. And those limits also deserve to be recognized and observed. The delay that occurred in this case and has occurred in other cases where the Wozniacki remedy has been applied is unavoidable. There may be some ways to confine the number of litigants that appear. There may be some ways to expedite the process here or there, but substantial delay is unavoidable. In Auchinleck, this court said 120 days delay for the notice of claim statute is unacceptable and would have the effect of eliminating information from the public debate. And that's exactly what the delay here has done. But delay is inevitable. And the suggestion that if only Judge Mannion had decided this on the merits, we wouldn't be here today, is ludicrous. Judge Mannion decided on the merits whether the release of the information should be stayed pending appeal. He decided it should not. On that issue, the standard of review is clearly erroneous exercise of discretion, what we used to call abuse of discretion, a highly deferential standard of review. But the plaintiffs sought review from the Court of Appeals on that issue. So regardless of what the standard of review is, the plaintiffs sought the review, and the Court of Appeals decided that Judge Mannion had abused his discretion and granted the relief, and that's why this information has been absent from the public debate for 2 years. The idea that the press and the public should have been satisfied here with redacted information is also unacceptable. That would give the public half the truth. The names are critical. What the reporting that's in the record shows that the Journal Sentinel was trying to do was convey the subtlety, the difficulty of the decisions that the school board faced. And to do that effectively, the Journal Sentinel needed to report on who was fired and also report on who was not fired. And the Journal Sentinel cannot report on who of these 548 was not fired unless it knows the names of all of the people who were fired. And the names are critical. And the other thing the reporting in the record shows is that the Journal Sentinel used the names to go back to the court files. And instead of reporting to the public simply what the Justice Department's rap sheet shows, the conviction record, it reported to the public on what the charges had been, what the case was before the plea bargain, what other facts were material to be considered by a judge in sentencing, and certainly were material to be considered by a school district in whether this person is an appropriate employee. So the names are critical. Half the truth would not be sufficient.
Mr. Lucy, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes 97-0308, Milwaukee Teachers of Education Association versus Milwaukee Board of School Directors. We'll take just a few minutes recess to clear the court and to allow in students from Augusta High School.